Time to get the local view. Columnist for the Register Guard. See what he's up to on the cover of the sports section. Catch up online, registerguard.com, on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Austin Meek, a good Tuesday to you. How's it going?
I'm doing good, Steve. How are you?
All right. So you were out at River Ridge today. Peter Jacobson, his foundation, hosted a youth event. He's just an amazing guy, won the PGA's Payne Stewart Humanitarian Award 4 years ago. So what were today's festivities all about?
Well, I spent this afternoon watching some 7 to 10-year-olds play golf. It's a great time. I can tell you that they hit the ball straighter than I do. It doesn't always go real far, but they, you know, they got pretty good swings. The event, it's part of the Erlen Jacobson Tour, which is named after Peter Jacobson's father, who was a big advocate of youth sports and youth golf in particular. So when Peter's dad died back in 1992, one of the things they did to carry on his legacy was start this Erlen Jacobson Tour, which is for youth golfers. It's really inexpensive to play. It's not competitive. They don't even keep score. It's just an introduction to the game for some of these kids. So it's a neat deal. There's another part of it where they can sign up for a card that lets them play at 50 courses up and down I-5 for only $5.
Whoa.
That makes the game a little more accessible for kids. It's a neat deal.
If I could play for $5 around, I'd quit my job after I'm done talking to you.
Well, you could maybe pass for 10 years old.
Only if they listen to me and get advice from my wife on how I act like a 12-year-old, but otherwise, nice. So this weekend, you wrote an article. The passing of a longtime NBA player, a local guy known by many as the man the Lakers traded for Wilt Chamberlain, and I've had him on my show over the years. I'm embarrassed to admit I wasn't aware that Daryl Imhoff had died. So kind of fill us in. Was it sudden? When did it happen and what happened?
Well, it did kind of go under the radar. I had missed it too and had missed the fact that he had such deep connections here. He passed away at the end of June over in Bend, which is where he'd been living, but he'd lived in Eugene for several years before that. And he was out playing golf with some friends from Eugene, had a heart attack. I believe he was 78, and passed away on his way to the hospital, as I understand it. So it was very sudden and sad because, you know, he was, from everybody I talked to, he was just a universally beloved guy, a great guy, a great storyteller, had a great sense of humor. You know, his sort of claim to infamy was that he was the guy who guarded Wilt Chamberlain during that 100-point game, although he would say repeatedly that it wasn't all his fault. He was not the usual starter, but was thrust into the starting lineup that night and only played 20 minutes because he fouled out, but yet he was saddled with the reputation as being the guy who got 100 points scored on him by Wilt Chamberlain.
Wow. As they say, it takes a village to give up 100 points. Now, he retired 45 years ago, well before the TV age, and, you know, I'm old enough to remember him. But if you look at what he did in college, the Olympics, the kind of work he did locally, safe to say he was not only a nice guy, but a really accomplished man.
He was. He played on a national championship team at Cal. He won a gold medal in 1960 with Team USA. He was the third pick in the draft, behind, I believe, Oscar Robertson and Jerry West.
Wow.
So that's pretty good company to be in.
Sure.
And his, you know, his NBA career, he was never a star. I think he averaged like 7 points and 7 rebounds over his career. But he played 12 years in the league. And he came back here, and I believe he worked with the U.S. Basketball Academy for a while here. Was very an avid golfer, worked in the golf business for a while. So, yeah, lived a pretty extraordinary life.
Talking with Austin Meek up the Register Guard. This is a great piece, by the way. Obviously heartbreaking. I want to move to a college football. Pac-12 media days later this week. You voted in the media poll. Seems like there's a consensus. Washington in the north, Trojans in the south. So who got your support, and where did you fit Oregon in?
Well, I tell you what, that was the hardest choice I made on my ballot, was where to put Oregon. And I was going back and forth with Oregon and Oregon State, actually. Those were the two hardest teams for me to slot in there. I ended up putting Oregon fourth in the north, and I believe I put Oregon State fifth. But I was flipping those back and forth until the last minute, because I think those two teams are really evenly matched. I wouldn't be shocked if they're playing for bragging rights and to see who has the better record for the last game. They might go into it with identical records, because I think those two teams are really evenly matched. And I did go with the two favorites at the top, Washington and USC. I think those clearly are, on paper, the two best teams in the Pac-12. And that sound you hear now, I think, is the USC hype train leaving the station, because I'm sure these next 2 days at Pac-12 media days, there's going to be a lot of talk about the Trojans, as there always is when they have a quarterback, and with Sam Darnold looking every bit like a Heisman contender. That's really all it takes for people to believe in USC. But I think this time it might be warranted. I think USC could end up being the Pac-12's best shot at getting a team in the playoff.
Did you give anybody, because I just got my Phil Steele magazine yesterday, and with what Utah lost in Colorado, UCLA off a 4-win season, did you give anybody any consideration in the South outside of Southern Cal?
You know, I like Utah. They did lose a lot, especially on defense. Hunter Dimmick was a force defensively. They're going to miss him. Joe Williams, the running back, really came in and, in a way, saved their season last year. So Utah did lose a lot. They added a little something with Darren Carrington, and they do have the quarterback back, and I like the coach. So I think Utah's been knocking on the door. You know, in another year, if there wasn't a strong front runner like USC, I might be tempted to pick Utah. Colorado, sort of the same thing. You know, that I don't think they were a fluke last year. I'm not going to say that they were. I think they deserved to win the South last year. But they're going to be breaking in a new quarterback. They lost quite a bit on defense. So I don't see Colorado being in position to repeat in the South. I just think it's pretty clearly USC and everybody else in that division.
Now, we talked about Darren Carrington last week, but as a grad, he's got options. And like you said, so he's going to Utah, which is interesting. I saw a picture today that they have this core values where no drugs, no Dewey's, and he's got both of those. What do you make of him going to Utah? And just, I don't know, it seems like an odd circumstance.
Well, it certainly makes things interesting when Utah comes to Autzen this year, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, wow, that's quite a storyline. I was a little surprised. I was surprised to see him go somewhere in the conference. I thought maybe he'd end up somewhere closer to home. But obviously the guy can play, and I think the moral of the story is, if you can play, somebody's going to give you a chance. You know, I saw that picture too. I think it's a little bit ironic, but the way coaches think about these things is, hey, I can fix it. Whatever's wrong, I can fix it. You know, I'm sure that coaches look at Darren Carrington and they say, you know, the issues he had at Oregon, that was between him and the previous coaching staff. And once he gets into my program, the way I do things, he's going to toe the line. Now, he had a couple chances with two different coaches at Oregon and couldn't make it work, but maybe Kyle Whittingham, maybe the way he does things is going to get through to Darren Carrington. Maybe the experience of being dismissed at Oregon and having to start over, maybe that's a wake-up call for Darren. I hope it works out for him. I hope that, you know, this is a way for him to get his life on track. I hope he has a good year. But I am surprised to see him going somewhere in the Pac-12.
Yeah, well, I guess they need somebody to put some of that black duct tape over that plaque they have at their facility there. Let's get to you and our pal Steve Mims. You got your new press box up. Folks can access either on the Register Guard site or your Twitter account. You were talking about Oregon's schedule. So after Southern Utah, which is kind of a nice way to ease into the Willie Taggart era, then Nebraska here and a trip to Wyoming, with so many Oregon unknowns, safe to say neither of those is what you would call a picnic game.
No, not at all. And I'd be really curious to see what the mood of the fan base is on Willie Taggart if the Ducks start 1-2. That would end the honeymoon pretty quickly. And it's possible. You know, I think Nebraska should be, you know, I think on par with the Nebraska team Oregon faced last year. They're going to be breaking in a new quarterback as well. So I think if you're Oregon, the opportunity for payback, having Nebraska on your home field after what happened last year, I'm pretty confident that Oregon's going to be ready for that game. To me, the Wyoming game is a total wild card. You know, it's a place that nobody from Oregon has ever been. It's a place where they don't get opponents like this very often. So I'm sure that the fans there are going to be very fired up for this game, and so is the team. And Wyoming's a good football team. You know, they went to a bowl game last year. They have a quarterback who's very talented. So, you know, I think that's going to be a really tough test, and maybe a defining game early on for Willie Taggart and what that first season is going to be like.
Yeah, the guy you're talking about, Josh Allen, does everything. And plus, what are they, 7,000 feet? It's an altitude game. Mm-hmm. They'll have played Iowa. Yeah, that's an interesting one. So then you have the first two Pac-12 games look winnable. I mean, Arizona State, Cal. And then the last two are here, Arizona and Oregon State. But, man, how rough of a patch is in between there, that stretch from early October to early November?
Yeah, it's a gauntlet, and I don't have it in front of me in terms of the order of the games, but it's at Washington, at Stanford, right? Who else is in that stretch?
I actually have it right in front of me, so I could cheat. At UCLA, Utah, yep. At Washington, and it starts with Washington State, who's got Falk.
Yeah, so if you're Oregon, I think the scary thing is if you don't get off to a good start, you're not getting any help. if they do start 1-2, then boy, it could get really ugly because the schedule's not getting any easier. It's nice to be able to start with Cal, you know, to open your Pac-12 schedule. But once you get past those first two games, it's just kind of a meat grinder. And then there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel that if you do survive that stretch and you get to November and your head's above water, then you get Arizona at home, you get Oregon State, and there's a chance to win one or two games there. If Oregon gets to that stretch needing one or two to get into a bowl game, then they've got some hope. But, man, if they start slow, the wheels could fall off pretty fast because the middle of that schedule is not going to do them any favors.
No, and crazy as it sounds, I mean, we're 5 weeks away. Follow him at Austin Meek RG. Look forward to the next piece on the whole Jacobson Foundation. That sounds really interesting and poignant. Registerguard.com. Austin, always a pleasure. Thanks for getting us started, and I'll catch up with you next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
Take it easy, Austin.